This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
From KMOX Sports.
A 2-2 pitch.
This is the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
And there's a high fly ball. That's hit to deep left field. It might go.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
And it's gone! A slammer for Nolan Arenado!
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hello again, everybody. Wait, that's not Tom. Welcome in, guys. Kevin Wheeler in for Tom Ackerman. Tom's traveling today, so he just landed in Fort Lauderdale, making his way to Jupiter, so he's going to be a big part of our coverage for the rest of Cardinals spring training, broadcasting games for us on the stream, I'm sure helping out on the TV side, and of course popping in on all of our shows and providing us all kinds of cool interviews and things. So Tom is on the road. Matt Pauly is on his way back. Joe Pott is still dancing. I think he's dancing. I texted him last night because obviously the first team to make the NCAA tournament this year. It's a great place for us to start, by the way. March 9th, the first NCAA tournament team this year is SIUE, man. Congratulations. I texted Joe last night. I'm like, Joe, polish up those dancing shoes, buddy. And he's like, you got it. So he's probably dancing right now. But that's one of the cool stories, man. This time of year is awesome. I know Tom loves this time of year. We all do. Because you've got the excitement of college basketball and all of these seasons coming to a close. We've got Arch Madness coming to a close today with a championship game between Bradley and Drake. We've got the big conference tournament starting up this week. We'll talk a bit about that with Josh Schertz here in a little bit. With the Billikens going into the A-10 tournament, Mizzou's going to be the number 7 seed in the SEC tournament. So, you know, obviously a fun time in that regard. We're now, guys, today's the 9th. On the 27th, it's opening day. So we're 18 days away from Cardinals opening day against the Minnesota Twins. So we're a little bit more than 2 weeks. I mean, it's I think they have like 16 games left counting today in Grapefruit League action. So, yeah, it doesn't get a lot better. And look, hopefully, it wasn't great last night, and it's a little tough now with Colton Parayko out, and we'll talk some Blues later on. Hopefully, they can make it interesting here for the rest of the regular season. They've played well here lately. I know they lost last night in overtime, but you got the point. They've got 5 points out of 8 on the first 4 games of this road trip. They got a couple more, Pittsburgh and Minnesota, to wrap up the road trip before they come back home. So, you know, there may be some fun there, although without Colton Parayko, it's going to be a whole lot tougher. It's just been that kind of year. It's just been every time you feel like momentum has built up and the team is starting to make a run, it just kind of comes back downhill. And I don't know, just not all that different from the last couple of years in total, but some good stuff to look at, and I think some really good play since Jim Montgomery took over. It's just still, you're still kind of in that back and forth mode, and hopefully they can get out of that and, you know, just be consistent the rest of the way. It's not going to be super easy, but they do have an easier path to reach the postseason, or at least an easier remaining schedule compared to some of their competitors in the Western Conference for that eighth spot. So there's something to at least consider there. Doesn't necessarily mean it's likely, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. But obviously, you know, a lot can change between now and the end of the regular season. The one thing that's not going to change is you're not going to see Colton Parayko back there during that time, and that's pretty rough. All right, so here on Sports on a Sunday morning, we broadcast, obviously, live from the Stiefel Sports Theater Studio. It's a theater, you guys. It's a theater. The Stiefel Sports Studio, and we got a lot to do. Bernie Miklas is going to join me in a few minutes. Always love talking to Bern. We've been doing a lot on the Gas House Gang lately, and if you've been missing those, stop it. It's not hard, man. It's every day at noon, live. Right here where you're watching all of us now. So if you're watching sports on a Sunday morning, and I can see, we got numbers on you, I can see that you're doing it. Don't miss the Gas House Gang at noon on weekdays. And, of course, if you miss that live, you'll be able to pick it up on a podcast anywhere you want to, just like you can with this show. So Bernie's going to join me at 10:15. We'll mix it up a little bit on a few different topics there, probably some college basketball, certainly a little bit of Cardinals. We'll talk to Josh Schertz at 10:30. Lutz Fahnenstiel is going to join us next hour around 11:15. And then we got Mo. So Mo will be around 11:30. I'll grill Mo. I'm going to put his feet to the fire. And then he'll mock me because that's what he'll do. No, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't talked to Mo on the radio in a long time. It's been a bit. It's, you know, scheduling is weird, you know, like when you're doing afternoons on weekdays, that's kind of when they're at work. You know, they're kind of at the ballpark or they're coming off the field, and we don't get that many opportunities to get front office dudes on the Dave Glover show. It just doesn't work out very well. Although we've had Ollie, and we certainly get our chances to talk to Rick Horton and the guys on a regular basis. But looking forward to talking to Mo today, too. And then right after we're done with sports on a Sunday morning, man, you got Cardinals baseball. Cardinals and the Yankees. It's a pretty opening day-ish lineup for the Cardinals today. The one exception being Jordan Walker's not in there. He's still recovering from that minor knee injury. But pretty much everybody else looks like somebody that'll be in the opening day lineup, right? You got Mason Winn, Lars Nootbaar, Wilson Contreras. Victor Scott would be the guy that's kind of in that Jordan Walker spot. But, you know, Brendan Donovan's in left. Nolan Gorman's at second base. Alec Burleson's playing, is in the DH spot today. So you've got what looks like something similar to an opening day lineup today. So it's going to be a lot of fun in front of Andre Pallante. The Yankees did not bring their A team. Of course, most of the Yankees A team is out. Garrett Cole's got an elbow problem now, and who knows? He said he's worried that it's serious. He missed more than half the year last year with a nerve problem in his elbow, and now he's getting second opinions. And when you're getting second opinions, that means you didn't like the first opinion. I'm just going to go on a limb and make that point. If you're getting second opinions, it means you didn't like the first one. But Garrett Cole is out. Giancarlo Stanton may be out for a while. He's got elbow problems. He calls them serious elbow problems. Apparently, it's a tennis elbow. He says it's related to changing his bat last year, but I've never heard of that before. But then again, you know, guys are doing things now with bats that we didn't used to do. So maybe it is more of a thing than you think of. So the Yankees are banged up. They're not sending their full regular squad today, but they got a few regulars that'll be in there against the Cardinals. So that'll be coming up at 12:05 after sports on a Sunday morning. We got Bernie Miklas joining us next here on KMOX. All right, rolling along on sports on a Sunday morning. Kevin Wheeler filling in for Tom Ackerman today. Tom making his way down to Florida. So he arrived just a little bit ago, so he's probably making the drive from the airport in Fort Lauderdale to Jupiter, Florida, a drive that I'm pretty familiar with and remember quite well. It's not too bad from Fort Lauderdale, a little worse when you're coming from Miami International. But Tom's on the scene. He'll be providing all of our in-person coverage here on KMOX for the last couple of weeks of Cardinals spring training. Happy to engage in the regular Sunday conversation. And Bernie, I got a chance to talk a lot. Bernie Miklas with us here on Sports on a Sunday morning in one of your regular spots. I know you bump around during the show, Bern, because I do actually listen on Sundays because I like to pop it up there. You know, I sit at home in my office when I wake up. I'll be honest, I don't usually wake up till about 10:30, so I have to catch up as we go, but I find a way to catch up, and I like to listen to sports on a Sunday while I'm setting up I have office time late in the morning. I sit there and read stuff and start to get ready for the week and do all that kind of stuff, and then listen to this show and then watch baseball.
Yeah, that's what I kind of do too. I bounce around. I may not listen to everything live, but I always circle back to it. So looking forward to your discussion with John Mozeliak later, 11:30 or
yeah,
so.
I was joking for the haters. I'm like, I'm going to hold his feet to the fire today. Like, yeah, okay, with 2 weeks in spring training, there's fire at this point. Right. Now we'll see what's going on. We'll get an update on Jordan Walker and some of these camp battles that you and I've talked a lot about over the last couple of weeks on the Guesthouse game, because there's some intriguing stuff. And you know, like, I can't wait to hear what he has to say about Victor Scott, who has been, I think, one of the brightest points in camp so far.
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest battle in camp, and it's the most interesting battle in camp, and it's really intriguing, too, because they have an opportunity. If they're going to keep Lars Nootbaar in left, they have an opportunity to, in effect, show the fans that when they talk about, you know, runway and all this other stuff, that a guy that represents what they've been trying to pitch to us, I think more than anybody on the position player side, is Victor Scott. So, you know, sooner or later, you know, we're going to find out if I'm still trying to figure out what exactly they're trying to do for the season. I think they're trying to be respectable. They're trying to win. I get it, but it's not a let's really try to win thing. They've returned most of their team from last year, especially on the position player side and the bullpen. But if this was supposed to be about giving young players an opportunity, I would ask, especially based on spring training and late last year, who would warrant an extensive opportunity more than Victor Scott? Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, with the one caveat that, you know, he's got a couple more weeks where he needs to maintain performance and, you know, get to see what happens. Because, again, that shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. I think you and I both agree on that. But these last 2 weeks are going to start looking more like real baseball. You know, teams are sending players out every day now. Yeah. You're going to see more and more just regular major leaguers. You're going to see more guys playing 7, 8, 9 innings as opposed to, you know, 4 and dive, 5 and dive. So these next couple of weeks start to look more like the real thing. So if you maintain performance during that time, that certainly couldn't be a negative.
No. And I don't know how the club views this. I mean, do they care like about his stats in the last couple of weeks? Now, listen, if he's really, you know, really goes off the side and, you know, he's striking out all the
time,
well, that's
right.
A different thing.
Right.
But I mean, you know, you talk about this quite a bit. And the stuff we do all week, you know, a guy can go, you know, 3 for 16 and you say, oh man, he's really in a slump, but it ignores the fact that maybe, and a lot of times this happens, he's hitting the ball extremely hard.
Yeah.
So I don't care if he's 3 for 16, because if he continues to hit the ball that hard, it'll turn, you know, it eventually pay off. So that, I think that's what we all look at. I think the team looks at that too. I mean,
for sure.
Don't look at batting average in spring training. You know, look at how hard a guy's hitting the ball.
And that info is available, man. Like, you go to baseballsavant.com. You can find it on MLB.com in the box scores. If you just want to go scroll that way, you can see how hard are they hitting the ball with any regularity. You can also track where guys are chasing, which is where your concern, my concern for Mason Wynn comes in, right? Mason had a great rookie year. I'm a big fan. I think he's a phenomenal player, but every young player has things to sharpen up, and his swing decisions need to get sharper.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And I threw a stat on, but I don't remember it now, but it's in one of my many pages and notes here. But, you know, I talked about Friday on Gas House Gang, you know, when Mason Wynn connected with the strike, with the pitch in the strike zone, his stats were phenomenal.
Right.
But when he swings at pitches outside of the zone and connects with them, no surprise, his stats are terrible. But the problem is he swings at pitches outside the zone way too many times.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Burleson's the same way. And I'm sure Nolan Gorman obviously is the same way. You and I, again, I keep saying you and I, but it's true. We see the game alike in a lot of ways. I'm going to do this today if I have some time. I want to go down every player and look at what they did last year, every hitter, every meaningful position player. Mm-hmm. And I want to see what they did in terms of how many times they swung at strikes, how many times they swung at balls out of the zone, and what their statistics were in each category.
Yeah.
Because I think we mentioned it the other day, one thing as a team overall, because they're returning players who had 82 of the plate appearances last year.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Other than Goldie, you know. But no, the thing as a team, they have to do a lot better. It's their strike zone judgment. They gotta quit getting themselves out by swinging at junk off the plate, and they do it a lot.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because pitchers are nastier than ever, which means sure. That skill though is that much more valuable. And you know, when you look at Wynn, Gorman, Walker, Burleson, the key to unlocking what their potential is basically this. That's the key, is to lay off the stuff you can't handle. And if it's called on you, it gets called on you. You just spit on it and let it go. And if it's called a strike, if it's wrong, now you know you can't challenge it in season. But if it's wrong and they call the strike, well, you can't hit it anyway. So what's the difference? You got to wait till you get the one that you can actually do something with.
Yeah, you still exactly you. You still have to maintain that discipline because, like you just said, I mean, yeah, you're going to get called strikes that maybe aren't really strikes. But I think actually, the umpires actually see. We all remember the umpires that stand out as being, you know, utterly incompetent,
right?
And there's only a few of them really. The overall, like whether the accuracy on balls and strikes. If I don't have the number in front of me. But it's phenomenal, and people wouldn't believe it.
Oh, it's true. It's 95%.
Yeah, so,
it's huge.
You know, this I. But yeah, what I would say, people watching, you know, games this year, don't smear the entire group of umpires just because baseball's got a system where you can have several umpires who are absolute clowns, and they have a 100% job security. I think most of these guys, overwhelming majority of these guys, are really good at what they do.
All right, Byrne, let's change gears. We only have like three minutes or so, but I did want to get a little bit of March Madness in, especially with the first tournament bid being locked up this year by SIUE. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I was going to watch it late last night, but I found out what the score was. It was one of those deals. but listen, and they won easily. They won convincingly. So I think this – see, I think when a team and it's great that it's a local team. I think when a team gets to March Madness for the first time, it's one of the great, great things about March Madness. You know,
yep.
It's you love to see people get in who've never been there before. That gives the tournament charm, if you ask me.
Oh, I totally agree. Look, we know at the end it's mostly going to be the big boys, right? At the end, sometimes it's not. You'll get the occasional Cinderella that gets to the Final Four. But for the most part, by the time you get to the Elite Eight, Final Four, it's mostly the big boys. But what makes the tournament cool is that everybody gets a shot, every conference at least, right? If you win your conference, tournament, you at least get your shot. And I know you can't do that for football. It's impossible. It's just too difficult to manage something that big when you can only play once a week. But when you can play like you can for college basketball, this is why the tournament is so cool.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the Missouri Valley Conference final today.
Yeah,
Bradley and Drake, the number one. Drake's the number one. Bradley's the number two. So you're going to see the two best teams in the conference going at it. And then you turn our attention briefly to Mizzou. Mm. They are in an utter defensive collapse. I did a video on it the other day, and it continued again yesterday. They can't stop anybody from scoring. I don't know how you fix all that before you get to the NCAA tournament. I mean, they've lost, you know, 4 out of 5. Their defensive metrics over the last 5 games, it's actually 6 games, are absolutely horrendous. Listen, I love this team, but I'm just saying they have gone south. They have gone south in a big, big way defensively.
Well, I mean, like you said, not a lot of time, but we have seen this team swing back and forth pretty wildly, both good and bad. Because about 2 weeks ago, we were all blown away with how good they looked.
Yeah, but again, the defense issues are not just like a random thing. I mean, it's been every game they're getting punished on the defensive end, especially 2 shots.
Yeah, and they're going to be the number 7 seed in the SEC tournament playing coming up on Thursday, if I remember that correctly. And obviously, we'll talk Billikens with Josh Schertz here in a few minutes, but they'll be playing on Thursday as well as the number 5 seed in the A-10 tournament. Good catching up, Byrne. We'll do this again tomorrow on the Gas House Gang at noon, and obviously tomorrow on DGS as well. So it's a lot of Wheeler and Bernie Miklas talking together on KMOX. I love it.
Well, Wheels, have a great rest of the show and have a great Sunday, man. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, you do the same, man. We appreciate you. That's Bernie Miklas here on KMOX. And again, he'll be joining I think we have all 4 of us tomorrow on the Gas House Gang. I think everybody's going to be there. Tom from Jupiter, Matt's back in town, Bernie and I. And then Bernie will be on with us on DGS in the afternoon tomorrow. All right, coming up next, let's talk some more hoops. The Billikens wrapped up the regular season. It was a wild win. It was a big senior night and a big performance from 6-year senior Gibson Jimerson. That was some kind of hoops game last night. A lot of fun. I know Josh Schertz had to have a lot of fun with it. We'll talk to him coming up next here on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
KMOX.
Swope for three to answer. Bang, he does! The Swope Show!
I've always loved Rammer as a guy. He's been a good friend for a long time. I love Rammer's play-by-play. And I, of course, I'm a big fan of Earl Austin Jr. as well. Two great guys on the broadcast.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March. So Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hell of a game last night. Happy to have Josh Schertz with us, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Coach, that was fun, man. I mean, it was wild. It was probably a little hairier than you wanted it to be there for a while, but as a fan watching at home, that was fun.
No, it was a good college basketball game, and you're spot on Rammer and Earl. Their passion and insight, wisdom, incredible, and do a great job of bringing that on the radio to our fans and just really understand the game. But they love basketball and certainly love SLU basketball. But it was, as you said, a really good college basketball game, two good teams. And I said afterwards, it's a that game was kind of a microcosm of our season. Some maddening things, some things that just leave you scratching your head, but, incredible resilience, making plays down the stretch, fighting to the, to the buzzer. And these guys have kind of run the gamut, really proud of them, and a great way to finish. I'm so happy for the seniors and that group that they get to leave on a win and head in the postseason.
Yeah, before we look ahead to that postseason in the A-10 tournament, let's talk about those guys, and in particular Gibson Jimerson, who has been around a long time. He owns a lot of records. He was phenomenal last night. I mean, 35 points, 8 rebounds, obviously 50% from 3. I don't know you're going to get a whole lot more than that from anybody, regardless of who they are and where they play, on senior night in their last home game.
Yeah, senior night, it can go either way, and sometimes guys get, too emotional. They squeeze too hard. And, Gib just, he's got such a great equilibrium, such a great balance, so even-keeled. And he's been playing his best basketball here at the end. You go back to, I think a week before, I think he had tied his career high with 33, and then, 20, whatever, at Dayton, and then, 35 career high. Fantastic basketball for him down the stretch run, which is what you want to see from your seniors. But he's left, such a incredible legacy here that some of his numbers, I don't think in the modern, climate of college basketball, I don't think some of the numbers that he's put up will ever be challenged. I really don't.
Man, no, that's a good point.
And he's at the top of the record books. You look at, points or field goals or attempts or threes or minutes or games, or you go through that. I mean, his name dots all over there. And like I said, I'd be shocked if some of those records ever are challenged, particularly his 3-point record. The biggest thing with his legacy certainly is the loyalty he's shown to St. Louis, the city, to the university itself, to the program. Incredible, because he could have left, could have gone, done something different. And, after last year when I came in and they made the decision to go a different way, that would have, really easy for him to abandon ship and say, hey, I'm going to spend my last year somewhere else, and if I'm going to play for a different coach, I'm going to do it at a different place. And him coming back is – we're not close to the team that we are without him. And he's done a great job. I said this, this group's laid some really good seeds. I hope we see the bloom next week. But regardless of what happens next week, this group has laid some really good seeds about culture and resilience and how we compete and how we do it together and competing fully in the games. And Gibson's been a massive part of that and all the good stuff to come. he helped lay that foundation this year.
Don't want to leave out the other seniors either. Obviously, Isaiah and Kobe had really good games last night and doing things in their way. Balanced, you know, contributions in a lot of different ways. And, you know, it's got to be nice from your perspective, especially in your first year, to be able to rely on three guys. And I should count Robbie. He's not a senior, but Robbie's got that kind of experience. But to be able to rely on guys that have been around a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the game has changed in the college landscape of, you know, it's really hard to have, you know, where you don't see very many freshmen playing significant minutes. I think I saw a stat the other day of, and maybe it was a week or two ago, of like top 10 teams in the country and freshmen that are averaging, I don't know if it was maybe double-digit minutes or 20 minutes a game or something like that. And I think there was five total on the top 10 teams.
Wow.
And three were on Duke.
Yeah, so one of them is going to be the number one pick. Yeah,
Flag can avoid that and the big kid. So, you know, three lottery picks. But, you know, I think there was five total. And so the game's changed to where, you know, it's gotten older. With NIL, players are staying in longer because they can make, you know, more money in college than they can overseas, or in some cases at the higher levels, low NBA contracts. So it's harder for young guys to play. You got to have experience, and that's where – you know, that starting five is an experienced group with, you know, up and down the line. And when you have, you know, the other seniors, like you said, Isaiah and Kobe have come in and really in 1 year impacted us in a really significant way. I don't know that there's been a guy, you know, between Isaiah, Robbie that have, I mean, the amount of clutch shots they've made this year and the amount of shots that Isaiah's made to, and the end of games has been just remarkable. And you know, a credit to he's just incredibly tough, a great competitor. He's got unbelievable courage and confidence. And so he's done that time and time again. And Kobe, you know, doesn't get the same acclaim as those other guys, but he does so many things that drive winning. Mm-hmm. And you know, those guys, those three seniors along with Robbie, have kind of had to be an Iron Man group because of all the injuries, adversity, but they've never made excuses. They've never hung their heads. They've never been, woe is me. They've just come to work. They've done whatever we've asked of them, and we've asked them to do a lot. And those guys, like I said, have planted as a group some unbelievable seeds here in year one. And I think we'll, as a fan base, reap the fruits of those in the years to come.
So as you look ahead this week, obviously the number five seed in the A-10 going into the A-10 tournament. Clearly, you know, just continued good health for those guys and staying out of foul trouble would be like right at the top of the list of things you're going to want to have happen. Is there anything else that you'd like to see that would help you guys make a bit of a run in that tournament?
Yeah, take better care of the ball.
Yeah.
We've had an issue with that, you know, all year in spurts. It's not been every game, but certainly it's been way too much. We got to do a better job of valuing the basketball. I think that's, you know, for us, the biggest, you know, the biggest flaw we have, you know, that is a controllable one. And, you know, yesterday, I mean, look, Duquesne leads the league in forcing turnovers, so it's not like they didn't have anything to do with it. They had a large part to do with
right.
it. But, you know, 18 turnovers, the amount of, you know, it's not just the turnovers, because the live ball turnovers, it's, you know, those lead to runouts and transition. And,
right.
you know, you can't guard one-on-one fast breaks. So, you know, we have to be better there. If we're going to really make a run in D.C., we've got to tighten up our ability to handle the basketball, pass the basketball. We did a lot of good things last night offensively, you know, 21 assists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought we generated a lot of good shots, shot unbelievably well from two, made whatever it was, 11, 12 threes, you know, you know, made some big-time free throws and stuff. But, you know, we have to be cleaner handling the basketball. Our margin for error is pretty small. You know, we're not going to be as deep as other teams. We don't play as many guys. We don't have as many guys dressing. You know, we have enough that if we take care of the ball, we think we're good enough to certainly play with and beat anybody in the A-10. And we think we've shown that throughout the regular season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I find it fascinating. I've been doing sports radio coach for 30 years. This is probably the first time we've had a chance to talk, because I don't do full-time sports anymore, just kind of part-time here and there while I'm doing afternoon drive here on KMOX. But I'm a baseball guy by my background. I've covered the Blues, covered the NFL, and it's just fascinating how often important runs, whether it's playoff series or just big games, how often the people in charge like yourself just go back to the basics. It's always about who can execute the very basic things. In football, they talk a lot about what you did, turnovers, you know, winning the turnover battle. It's not something that really exists in the world of baseball, but there it's as simple as catch it, throw strikes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're 100% right. It, you know, the fundamentals of the game, a lot of things in the game change. The fundamentals never do. You know, I think what wins never does. And the key to, you know, the key to always, to me, to winning is to eliminate losing. You know, I think you have to always reverse engineer it. You know, it's not about, you know, what you to win. It's about, you know, it's about not putting yourself in peril. It's taking the luck out of the game. So, you know, whether that's, you know, taking care of the basketball in basketball, I think that's probably the most important thing to eliminating losing. You know, sprinting and setting your defense every single time. You know, protect the rim, the line without fouling. Taking great shots, you know, hunting great offensively. Defensive rebound, not allowing second chance opportunities. There's a lot of things inside of a basketball game that are, in my mind, pretty controllable that the really good teams do. And what you try to do, like I said, is not focus so much on what you got to do to win, but all the things that you can control that can eliminate losing. And so you just, and I think it's the same thing in most sports. You try to control the things you can, because there are random things that happen that you can't control. And you're playing against an opponent, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to win, and there is randomness, there's bounces, there's referees calls, there's, you know, luck involved in all these things. But you can't focus on those things. You got to lock into the controllables. And again, in all sports, I think there's a lot of controllables. And as you get to elimination time, which is where we're at, you know, there's a pressure to make sure that you're playing to your standards at the highest level, because you don't have to worry about, you know, our team's going to be ready to play. It's elimination time. You know, everybody's turned up, you know, as much as they can be. So now it comes down to your ability to execute and sustain it for as much of the competition as possible.
Well, Coach, I'm glad you guys all had to have as much fun as you did last night getting the win to wrap up the regular season and celebrating those seniors. Continue that. Good luck in D.C. on Thursday and hopefully beyond that. And we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. That's Josh Schertz, of course, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. I'm not making any predictions because I don't really want to do that too far in advance. I like to go game by game when it comes to college basketball when you get into the postseason, because you just don't know who's going to be the team that's just caught fire on a given day. But I do like how they set up for the A-10 tournament. I mean, assuming that they can do what Coach said, which is, you know, avoid the things that you're basically blowing yourself up. Like Robbie had 10 turnovers last night. I mean, if you cut that in half, you probably win by 8-10. You know, instead of winning by two, or maybe you win in regulation instead of having to go to overtime. And that's not putting it on him. It's just the point that kind of illustrates what he was talking about, is taking better care of the basketball across the board is the kind of simple thing. Because in these short tournament runs, in the early parts, I don't worry that much about teams that are a little light in terms of numbers. You know, 4, 5, 6 guys in an individual game early in a tournament with Monday, Tuesday, and Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, just practice, no games. That's not hard. The games maybe the third, fourth game of the weekend probably get a little bit harder. So the challenge seems like it would be more once you get past the first, maybe second game, when you're relying on, I mean, what the Big Four played 44, 45 minutes each last night. And it's not bad. It's a good thing that they, and I'm sure every player, I mean, I know I didn't play basketball very long because I stunk, but everybody wants to play, man. I mean, everybody would play every minute of every game if you let them. And those guys want to be out there, and they're young, and they're athletic, and they're in great shape and all of that. But if you start stacking games on top of one another, that may be where it gets to be more of a challenge. But I think early on, they're going to be in a pretty good position, certainly favored in the opener for their opener on Thursday, because they're going to be the better-seeded team. So we'll look forward to having that. And by the way, that'll be here on KMOX on Thursday as well. So we got a busy week, man. So we've got Cardinals baseball today, 12:05 Cardinals and Yankees. We're going to have the Cardinals on Wednesday, which I believe is also a noon game, if I'm getting that right. And then Thursday we'll have the Billikens. Friday, who knows, man? Friday we have the Cardinals in the evening. That's for sure. That's going to be an evening game on this Friday. And we may have another Billikens game too in the middle of all that, depending on what happens on Thursday. So it's going to be a busy sports week here on KMOX, and obviously looking forward to that. I'm in a good time of year. There are a lot of times of year that are great. I love this time. I love the fall when you're wrapping up baseball, and hockey and basketball have just started getting going, and football's just getting started. I love that time of year. But, man, this is a good one. This is with March Madness and then leading into the NHL and NBA playoffs. The NFL draft coming up here in what, a month? And then, of course, you know, the Cardinals and Major League Baseball 18 days away. Well, that's for the United States. They're going to be opening in Japan, what, next week, right? Yeah. I forget what the date is, but it's like, is it like the 18th or something like that? 17th, 18th, 19th? So they're going to be real baseball games coming up this week. And then obviously the week after, well, I think it's 2 weeks after that, but it's like 18 days from now when we get to our opening day.
Do you think March is the best sports month, or what do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. It's tough because I don't know. I mean, it varies because I think September is pretty awesome. October is pretty awesome because being a big baseball nerd, the baseball playoffs combined with having the NBA, the NHL, and the NFL and college football all going at the same time, that's pretty sweet too. Like, but this is definitely one of those times. You know, there are quieter times. Midsummer's quieter. You know, January and February are a little quieter when you're in the dog days of the regular season of hockey and basketball. And baseball's still quiet, and there's not much. You know, after the Super Bowl is over, things kind of calm down for a while. There are some quiet times, but other than that, I'm pretty good with all of it, man. When you like all of them, it's not hard to be fired up at some point throughout the course of the year. All right, so many thanks to Josh Schertz again. That was sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. We've got Lutz Fahnenstiel coming up a little bit later on. Match 3 for City tonight in Los Angeles against the Galaxy. They're the defending champs, but they're out of the gate kind of crappy. And I was reading some stuff this week that they have some concerns there with injuries and why they're out of the gate slow. So it should be an interesting, I almost did it. Interesting match tonight. And by the way, that'll be 6 o'clock on Y98, our sister station, later on tonight. We'll have Lutz at 11:15, John Mozeliak at 11:30. We're going to talk about Victor Scott. I'm going to ask about update on Jordan Walker. I also want to, you know, I'm going to maybe drill down a little bit with Mo on evaluation of offense in spring training. In fact, I'll tease more into that coming up next here on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. Kevin Wheeler filling in for my buddy Tom Ackerman. Tom is in Jupiter. I think he's got to be in Jupiter by now. He texted us that he'd landed like 2 hours ago, so he's got to be getting settled in Jupiter. I'm sure he'll be at the game today. You know how it is when you get down there, man. I mean, when you're going down to Jupiter to cover spring training, literally the first thing you do before you check into your house that the station has rented for the month for, you know, Tom and Matt to share, or back in the day when it was Tom and I that were sharing it, you don't even go to the house. You go straight to the ballpark. I mean, that's just it. You go there, straight to the ballpark. You leave your car with all your crap in it in the parking lot, and you just go right to the, whether it's a game, or in my case, when I used to go down early. I mean, you go straight to, like, you know, pitchers and catchers reporting, and you get down and, all right, pull out the microphone and the recorder, and let's go talk to people before you even go check into your house. You always got time for that later. It's always fun. The first thing you do is just get out there and get to some baseball. And for Tom, it's going to be Cardinals and Yankees. And we'll have that for you here on KMOX. Pre-game will start in about an hour five. 12:05 is the scheduled first pitch today. Andre Pallante is pitching for the Cardinals, and I think it's Carlos Carrasco for the Yankees. The Cardinals with the full, almost everyday regular opening day lineup. No Jordan Walker. He's still recovering from the minor knee thing, but everybody else has the look of somebody that might be in the opening day lineup. So be fun to see how they look today. And we're going to talk. So I mentioned before the break, some of the things I'm going to tee up for Mo today. I definitely want to talk about offense and offensive evaluation. You know, because the Cardinals, it's a fact. You can look it up. The Cardinals aren't scoring a ton of runs. And you can look at some of the traditional stats, and for some guys, they don't look very good. For other guys, they look just fine. But traditional stats are deceiving in small samples, right? They're not deceiving over 6 months. If you hit 250 over 6 months, you're a 250 hitter. Now, there are years where you have good or bad luck, and we can figure that out now pretty easily based on the quality of somebody's contact. So if somebody is regularly hitting the ball hard and they're not just beating the ball into the ground all the time, if they didn't have great numbers, it's probably bad luck. And we actually have the means now to kind of gauge that. It's not a guess. It's pretty easy to figure out using odds, right? So, you know, it's all calculated now, where they know that a ball hit at a certain angle at a certain velocity is going to be a hit a certain percentage of the time. And when it's not, that means bad luck in some way, shape, or form. And when it, and sometimes you get the opposite, right? You get good luck where you're not hitting the ball very well, but it falls in. And what I think is fascinating, and this is what I do, so this is not, I'm not preaching to anybody. I'm telling you what I do. When I'm evaluating hitters, either for my fantasy baseball drafts, which I do because I'm a nerd, or I'm doing it for radio shows, or heck, I mean, look, I coach teenagers, man. When I'm evaluating them, I'm not looking at their batting average. I'm, you know, if a parent comes to me and says, my kid's batting 300, why is he not batting higher in the order? Like, because he's got nothing but bloops and doinks. Like, you're evaluating the quality of contact and the quality of the at-bat. Are you drawing some walks here and there? Are you laying off pitches you're supposed to lay off of? Who are you facing? You know, and I'm not talking about the teenagers now. I'm talking about spring training. Like, are you facing this the guy that's going to be in high A to start the year? Or are you facing Max Scherzer? You know, I think there's a lot that goes into evaluating hitters in spring training to where, like, just as an example, I'm going to bring up Victor Scott. Victor Scott has crazy good numbers in spring training. He's hitting .389. He's on base 50% of the time, and he's slugging .722. Like, that's like 100 points better than Albert Pujols at his best, right? Like, but that's, is that real or is that not real? I'm going to go on a limb and say no, it's not. But it is to a degree because he is hitting the ball hard. Harder than you would think for a guy that's a speed guy first and a contact guy. He's actually doing some really nice things in that regard. Jordan Walker, his numbers haven't been good. His traditional numbers haven't been good. He's 2-for-14 and he's got 8 strikeouts. The 8 strikeouts is bad. I mean, like, that's a problem because that's a sign that he's into that habit that Bernie and I were talking about at the beginning of the hour where you're chasing pitches you can't do anything with. There's some swing and miss in the zone for him or in the heart of the zone, but it's more chasing pitches above the zone or chasing that low breaking ball away, which is a problem. But on the positive side for Jordan Walker, he's hitting the ball hard all the time. So I think the number was this. I think he's put 7 balls in play and, or maybe it's 8. 8 balls in play, 7 of them have been at like 100 miles an hour or more. I mean, he's got 7, those 7 balls in play average more than 100 miles an hour. That's what it is. They average more than 100 miles an hour per. They're not all above that. But they're all 95, 96 plus. And average exit velo in Major League Baseball is 88.5. So he is hitting the ball hard. So while there are negatives, the swing and miss, right, the strikeouts, those are negatives. There's also a little bit of a silver lining there. You're like, man, but he's hitting the crap out of the ball. When he hits it, he's hitting it really hard. And that's part of what you have to do. You have to account for, yeah, the regular numbers matter to some degree, but what matters more is, are you hitting the ball hard? Are you laying off the pitches you're supposed to lay off? So swing decisions, you hear that's a common phrase in Major League Baseball in modern times, swing decisions. It's just basically deciding what to swing at. And guys, it's the oldest rule in the book. Ted Williams' number one rule of hitting was get a good pitch to hit. Not do this with your hands or do this with your stride or no, get a good pitch to hit. Oh no, by the way, his second rules were like hit it hard and hit it in the air. Those if you want to sum up Ted Williams, that's it. Those three things. So swing decisions are going to matter. What they're seeing on the backfields matters in live BPs and things along those lines too. And we're going to talk about that with Mo coming up in about a half an hour here on Sports on a Sunday morning. All right, Kevin Wheeler filling in for Tom today. Tom is in Florida, and he'll be back in this chair, I would assume, next Sunday via remote. Or either that, or maybe one of us will be stepping in for him as well. I haven't checked the schedule that far in advance. I don't think that far in advance. I'm day-to-day, man. You tell me what's coming up tomorrow, and I do know what's coming up tomorrow. I'll be doing DGS tomorrow afternoon. Obviously, we got Cardinals baseball 1 hour from now. So the Cardinals and the Yankees at 12:05. We'll catch up with John Mozeliak at 11:30. And then have a quick little segment after that and turn you over to the Cardinals pregame. Looking forward to that one. This is a good one. The Cardinals, as I mentioned earlier, have what resembles an opening day type lineup, with the exception that Jordan Walker's not back in the lineup yet, still nursing the sore knee, but it sounds like he's getting close. I'll ask Mo about that when we get a chance to talk here at 11:30. We'll also talk about evaluating offense in the spring and the balance of game performance, batted ball numbers, live BPs, and how you're looking there. Because those guys, by the way, they get a lot more at-bats on the backfields facing their teammates, facing people in the organization than they do in spring training games. So there's a lot that goes into that. We'll have him lay some of that out. We'll talk some about the rotation. I'm really interested in the bench competition too. Some interesting guys there, and we'll try to throw as much as we can at Mo. Just put it that way. We may not have time for everything because I've got a list of like 97 things. We'll throw what we can at Mo starting at 11:30. Lutz Found It Steel is going to join us here in a few minutes. Talk a bit about City and their third match of the season tonight. Couple of ties, sorry, draws. I knew it. Dang it. I'm trying so hard to get it right. I'm not going to do that when he's on the air. I'm going to sound like an idiot. Couple of draws so far. They're taking on the Galaxy, the champs, league champs from last year. That'll be 6 o'clock tonight on Y98. But the Galaxy off to a bad start. They're not going well. They've had some injuries, some changes. So we'll see what he thinks about the matchup and just kind of get his assessment of the team heading into their third match of the season. Didn't get a lot of time yet to talk a bit about the Blues. Bummer last night. I mean, it's nice to get the point, and I don't want to over dramatize. A loss to the Kings, 2-1 in overtime last night. I don't want to over-dramatize that. I mean, it's obviously a game that you want to win when you're looking at trying to, you know, pick up some space in that wild card race. And the reality of it is, I mean, we can all do math. The reality of it is the only spot that's really at play is the number 8 spot, which belongs to Calgary right now at 70 points. Then you've got Vancouver at 69, the Blues at 69. Utah's behind there. I think Utah might be a little too far out. I mean, it's only 3 points, but again, when you're talking about making it up against 4 teams, that complicates it. We'll throw them in there. And then after that, everybody else is pretty much out of it in the West. But you've got that group of teams. I don't think anybody's catching Minnesota in the 7th spot right now. And they've kind of been going back and forth with Colorado. Between the third place in the Central Division and that first wild card spot, they got a pretty good advantage. So barring a collapse, probably not in play. But the problem for the Blues, as it relates to Calgary and Vancouver, is that you're a point behind Calgary, you're tied with Vancouver, but those teams have games in hand on you. So the Blues have played 65 games, Vancouver's only played 62, Calgary's only played 63. It doesn't mean they're going to get points in those games, it just means they have more potential points remaining in a very close race. And the Blues do have the easiest schedule of those three teams, so that's good. And, you know, if Parayko hadn't gone down on Friday for the rest of the regular season, I'd feel a lot better. Because, you know, they have looked better since the Four Nations break ended. I mean, even last night, I know it's a loss, but it's still a good performance on the road. It was your fourth straight road game. You've got 2 more road games on this trip. And it's not terrible to be 2-1-1 in your first 4 on a trip. Getting 5 of a potential 8 points is fine. You're just in a position where, and look, they've gotten points in 9 of their last 10. You're 7-1-2 in your last 10 games. They're in a position to do something, but you're at a disadvantage for a couple of the reasons that I mentioned. But the biggest one is not having Parayko. That's going to be a really hard thing to make up for with, you know, the offense that he's been providing, his stability, his skating ability, which really, I'll be honest, that was something that stood out to me quite a bit in the Four Nations, was his skating ability relative to the other best players in the world. Like, we've always known that, you know, you've always known that it's like one of his strengths. He can push the puck up with his legs, get involved in the rush, get involved, use it for defensive purposes in his own zone, whatever. But it really, I thought, stood out in the Four Nations. And that was a tough blow on deadline day to get that news. And, you know, I think Army put it well, and I have to agree with him, that it's just not the time to do something costly. You don't do that to make a push for the 8th spot. You know, I get, you know, and I gotta say, I wouldn't have sold either. I know you're in a tough spot, but I wouldn't have done that either, because I do think that when you have a chance and you've got this opportunity to try to make a run, making the playoffs is better than not in this situation. Because, one, you never know what's going to happen. 8 seeds have beaten 1 seeds before. Doesn't mean it would, but it happens. You get the experience for some of your young guys, which is a good thing to get those playoff game that playoff game experience. And there's no guarantee that if you finish in the lottery, you're actually going to benefit from it. You know, I mean, you might move up a few spots, but you also might be stuck right where you're supposed to be, in which case you're not getting really any benefit from missing out on that playoff spot. And let's not be silly. Making the playoffs does mean a little extra money, and that's a good thing for every hockey team. It's a good thing for every pro sports team, but it's especially good for hockey teams that operate on slightly tighter margins than baseball teams or NFL teams. So hopefully they'll still have that push in them. They don't play again until Thursday, so you got some time to rest up. They'll take on Pittsburgh Thursday in Pittsburgh and then Minnesota next Saturday in Minnesota. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit, City SC. They're in L.A. tonight, and they got an interesting matchup against the Galaxy. We'll get the latest on how they're doing on that matchup with sporting director for City SC, Lutz Fahnensteel, next up here on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
And with the privilege of filling in for my buddy Tom Ackerman today, Kevin Wheeler with you here, again, broadcasting to you live from the Stifel Sports Studio. We've got Cardinals baseball coming your way in a little bit. 12:05 for the first pitch between the Cardinals and the Yankees. We'll have John Mozeliak just after 11:30. Right now, though, we're going to turn our attention to City SC. They're in L.A. to take on the Galaxy tonight. You can catch that on Y98 tonight, and to talk a bit about that match. And also just kind of how things are going here in the beginning part of year three. We've got Lutz Fahnensteel, sporting director for City SC. First of all, Lutz, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you doing this. Also, my first time getting a chance to talk to you. I've been listening to you for a long time, but not doing sports full time anymore. I haven't had a chance to talk to you, so thanks for doing this, man. It's nice to catch up.
Yeah, great to talk to you. We just actually on a walk, you know, with the team on Manhattan Beach. Just to get prepared after breakfast for the game. So, yeah, we are looking forward to the game today.
That sounds like a nice thing. We have a pretty nice day here, but I bet it's a little nicer out there.
Only a bit warmer here, but, yeah, I don't think there's that much difference.
So we're really early into this third season for you guys. Any early impressions? I mean, there are obviously some really good things going on because nobody's able to generate much offense against you guys. And I know the obvious goal will be to score more goals and to be creating more offense. How do you assess the first couple and how do you weigh the first couple of the games early in the season compared to where you want the team to be down the road?
Yeah, I think, you know, can look pretty general at the moment. It's very early days. Having a new coaching staff with Olaf Melberg, it takes a bit of time, which is very normal, and you know, we're very happy to give him that time. But I believe that you saw already lots of positives, to be honest. The game last week, you know, having a nil-nil away to San Diego is one of these moments when you believe, well, it's an expansion team, maybe it's not a great result, but they won again yesterday away to Salt Lake. They won mm-hmm. before against LA Galaxy. So that kind of puts it into a little bit in a better perspective that it was a good game for us with a good result at least. And yeah, I mean, the obvious is obviously we need to score some goals. There's no doubt about it. We created enough chances against Colorado in the opening game. We just didn't score. And against San Diego, it was a different kind of game where defense was, I think, very strong, but we didn't create enough going forward. And I think that's today a big opportunity against LA Galaxy, which has their own trouble, I would call it, to come here and be confident and walk here with a good result.
It's fascinating. You know, the defending champs, from what I've been paying attention to, from what I've been reading here the last few days, beat up a little bit. Some injuries. They're not really off to the greatest of starts. And we all know, I've covered sports for 30 years. Lutz, you've been around it your entire life. Everything seems like it makes sense until it doesn't. So, you know, only the game, only the match is going to tell us what we need to know about tonight. But it is an opportunity for you guys.
Yeah, you know, I would always put it this way. I mean, they struggle at the moment, but they have a lot of quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really tell us a lot what happened in the last 2-3 weeks. That's in the past. You know, you can't change the past. They can't change the past, but we just have to come here and play our game. We know what their weakness is. We know what their strength is at the moment. As you mentioned, there's a big number of players are out. So we get them for us in the perfect moment. Do they still have enough quality to beat any team in the league? Of course they do. So it's up to us to play our own game. We shouldn't really be too concerned what's good and what's bad on the LA side and just focus on our strengths. And I believe that's the best way of going into an away game anyway, especially... You know, let's be honest, they are the current champions. They are the MLS Cup champions from 2024, and that's always mm-hmm. a tough game to beat them away from home.
But it's also a good way to test yourself. You know, I think that that's the other interesting part, especially early in the season, where you can find out more about yourself going up against somebody that's used to winning. And look, you guys have had plenty of success in your own right. You know what it's like to be on the side of the team that's winning more often than not. But I think these early season, we've been struggling with this, talking about, you know, we're not even in the regular season yet, Lutz, for the baseball season. We're just in spring training, yeah, and people are worried about performances and things. But early in any long season is as much about learning as it is about results, although results matter first.
Of course, it's always about in professional sport. You are results driven. You know, there is nothing really you can buy yourself for if you have a great performance and walk away with nothing, then people don't really care. Sometimes, right, you have a bad performance and you're getting a win in the last minute and nobody was really happy in that moment. But on the long term, on Monday, nobody talks about it anymore.
That's,
it's
right,
just really what's under the dotted line, what you see on the table. And I think that's the takeaway we have to have. You not always have to play the most beautiful football to be successful, because we got bitten last year. We played some great games in the start where you thought it was a perfect team performance and we still lost it. So I rather take an ugly one once in a while and walk away with a win.
You mentioned, obviously, there's been a bit of a transition over the last calendar year. You started that transition in season last year and it's continuing here early. But you also have the stabilizer in Roman Berkey, who is fun to watch. He's obviously phenomenal. I mean, you, given your background, you know the importance of having a keeper that just keeps everybody stable.
Yeah, by a mile, the best goalkeeper in the league. You know, I mean, he's our captain. He's the face of the franchise. He's just a player who always performs, who's a role model every day in training, where the youngsters really can look up to him and see just simply the way he appears every day, mm-hmm, the way also he looks after his body, the way he looks after himself. It's just the way, I would say, how it should be. And yeah, having the first two games, two clean sheets, I think is great. He didn't have that much to do like in the last years early on, so we hope we keep it this weekend as well like that. But yeah, Roman is definitely, I would say, that the golden egg we pulled out when we started this team.
it's always nice to have that, right? It's always nice to have that I would say the cornerstone, right? The rock that you can build around.
Yeah, it's just a difference maker, you know, and you know exactly what you get. It's just not just that he's stable. He's a born winner.
Right.
He can make the difference, and he actually can. A goalkeeper like him, he probably gets you 10, 12 points a season, which is exactly that what makes the difference of being a playoff team and missing the playoffs.
No, that's a really great point. And I know, you know, there are some professional sports that are more about individual matchups, others that are about, you know, unity and teams functioning as a unit. Certainly soccer functions that way. Hockey functions that way. Football functions that way. American football. And I find that to be such a fun part about this particular sport, is the way that everything has to play off of one another, regardless of what's happening in the moment. It's not much. There are moments of individualism, but it's not much about an individual doing individual things as opposed to the group knowing what they're supposed to be doing all at once.
Yeah, I think this is one of our strengths, especially in year one, that we didn't have, you know, the super big names, like you said, the individual superstars who believe they're the best thing since sliced bread. That doesn't really work that well, especially in a team sport. And soccer is a pure team sport. We all know that. I think soccer is a game where you not just need 11 players on the field, but you need another 5, 6, 7, 8 who are on the bench, who know exactly what their place is, to come on, to really melt in immediately. And yeah, I don't believe in that typical idea of having 2-3 outstanding players on massive contracts,
mm-hmm,
and the rest are simply there just to fill in the places. I think you need to have a solid squad, you need to have a deep squad, and that keeps you going over years and not just on a very, very short term.
You know, that's fascinating. That's an interesting philosophy, because, again, we have that debate a lot in our sports world, the debate about stars, star-loaded teams that are kind of top-heavy versus the balance. So where did that get drilled into you? At what point, was it in your playing career or your post-playing career, where you started to kind of understand or believe that that was the way to go?
You know, I just go to Florida and talk about Miami here. Obviously, if you have a player like Lionel Messi, which is,
mm-hmm,
probably the best player of all times, of course, that has a a massive impact on everything. But I think we also need to look into our market and the way St. Louis is built, the way St. Louis likes their sports teams to be, where I think hard work and being modest, being down to earth and really get out there and grind it out is much more liked and much more welcome than just being a little bit of a show pony and look good. I don't think this is what the crowds in St. Louis really want. So I believe going out there and build a strong core where you have young players added on, local players added on, it's something where I think the people in St. Louis can reflect much more to and enjoy much more than just having this one or two really big names who have no kind of connection to the city and no connection to the people, who basically do their bit of business on a Saturday and go back home. I think there is much more to football than looking at it from this perspective. St. Louis is such a strong soccer city, such a big culture when it comes to the history of it, that I think we can build a much, much bigger thing than just based everything on one or two big names, which are obviously not lasting forever. And it's about the legacy. It's about what the Taylor family also believe in, what the values are for our ownership. And I think that is what my job is very clearly to fulfill that more on the sporting side, but to get exactly built that legacy, which not just lasts when I'm here or when the current players are here, but for another 10, 20, 30, hopefully hundreds of years.
Well, you guys have already made such a massive impact on the community, and it's a community that already loved the sport. It's even more on display since you guys got working here a couple of years ago, and we really do appreciate the work you're doing. Good luck tonight out in L.A., and enjoy the time out there. Come away with a couple of points, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you very much.
You've got it. That's Lutz Fahnenstiel, the sporting director for City SC. And again, 6 o'clock tonight against the L.A. Galaxy. That'll be on Y98, our sister station. That's fascinating. I love talking about the philosophy of building teams, right? And it's interesting. I'm listening to him talk about, a balanced team where everybody contributes. That sounds like the Blues Stanley Cup team, right? Not that Alex Pietrangelo wasn't a star or that there weren't stars. Roman Berkey's a star. But I'm always interested in roster construction where you have teams. Now, you've got unicorns like the Dodgers that can do both, right? They've got all these superstars, and they've got a balanced team with a lot of contributors. But a lot of teams make the choice between those two philosophies. And actually, a lot of the Cardinals teams in recent years have been a lot like that. Although, not always. I mean, you had Albert and guys like that, too. But Albert was a guy that played like those grinders, as opposed to the guys that Lutz was describing there. All right, speaking of the Cardinals, man, we've got baseball at 12:05. Cardinals and the Yankees down in Jupiter. We're going to talk to John Mozeliak next here on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
But he turns on a pitch, and it goes over the bag down the right field line. Win round second. He's going to third. Scott goes into second, cruising. And Victor Scott continues to swing a hot bat. Two hits on the day.
There you go, our buddy Mike Claiborne with the play-by-play there. A little highlight from Victor Scott from here from the spring. So far, putting up a good show. I guess I shouldn't make that judgment. I should ask the question of John Mozeliak about the show that Victor Scott is putting on down there. First of all, Mo, good to talk to you. I'm sorry that you got to talk to me instead of Tom, but it is what it is today.
That was quite all right. Nice to hear from you, Kevin.
How's everything going down there?
So far, so good. It's been a good camp. Obviously, the most important thing is get work in, try to stay healthy. But we're trying to take a real hard look at some of these younger guys and really get an understanding of what we might be able to expect from them this season.
With 18 days until opening day, obviously just a little bit more than 2 weeks of games left down there in the Grapefruit League. This is kind of where it gets, I don't want to say gets real, right, Mo? But, I mean, this is where those young guys you're referring to, whether it's Victor Scott or maybe even J.J. Weatherholt, depending on how much longer he sticks around, where they get to see more just regular major leaguers, because the further we go, the fewer younger guys they're going to be in camp.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. That first week and a half of games, a lot of times by the fifth, sixth inning, you're starting to see some jerseys with no names on the back. And so that's definitely guys that represent opportunities at the minor league level. But as we get closer to opening day, starting pitchers go deeper, and then trying to find those innings for relievers becomes a little more challenging. So you're right in the terms of the type of arms you're going to see moving forward. And it is good exposure for somebody like a JJ. You know, it's his first major league camp. Mm-hmm. He's opened up a lot of eyes. He's a really impressive young man. Obviously, I don't anticipate him making our team, but it's still a great exposure for him and a great learning experience.
So we played the highlight from Victor Scott. We've been talking about him a lot. And, you know, he's got the pretty regular counting numbers that jump off the page. And I know that that's one small part of the evaluation process of any hitter down in spring training because of the reasons we mentioned. You don't always know who you're facing. You got good luck, bad luck. We do have some batted ball data, but it's, you know, small sample. So talk a bit about, I guess we can you know, shoehorn Victor into this, but talk a bit about that evaluation process between, you know, when you're balancing results in games, batted ball numbers, what you're seeing in live BPs, what you're seeing in other situations. How do you guys put all of that together for a young guy like Victor Scott?
Yeah, good question. And, you know, obviously we consume a lot of information from a lot of different areas. So you have in-game data, you have backfield data, you have batting cage data, and all of that definitely gets put into our calculus as far as like how things are progressing. And I think in Victor's case, you know, there's a couple things to me that stand out. One is, I think from a defensive standpoint, working with John Jay, he's cleaned up a few things. And I think, you know, utilizing that speed is only going to make him more of a plus-plus defender moving forward. And then from an offensive standpoint, he just looks a lot more comfortable at the plate. I think last year his in zone, out of zone, swing rate was not where you wanted it to be. So he just seems a little bit more disciplined, a little bit more comfortable. Needless to say, he is putting up some good offensive numbers at this point. But net, I think when you are looking at him, whether it's in the cage, backfield, or in a game, he does look like a more confident hitter this year.
It's interesting, right? Because it seems like he's hitting the ball quite a bit harder. And I know, again, small sample that we have access to. You guys have access to more. But that can be related to what you're talking about, that swing decisions and getting after the right ones. And we've noted on our various shows, Gas House Gang or whatever, that a lot of young guys have that, whether it's Victor or Jordan Walker or even Mason Wynn to a degree, that swing decisions really do come into play when it comes to producing.
Without a doubt. You know, it's one of those things where making smart decisions really dictates type of at bat you're going to have and ultimately the type of numbers you're going to put up. And I think last year, a lot of our younger players were really pressing because we did play a lot of tight games. And so everybody was like trying to probably do more than they should. And usually the first thing to go is poor decision making at the plate. Mm-hmm. And so I think in Victor's case, again, just looks more comfortable. Looks like he knows what he's doing from a strategic standpoint. And that part's encouraging.
Mo, do we have anything new at all on Jordan Walker, or is it still kind of the same, not that big of a thing, but we're just kind of waiting a few more days?
He has been cleared for baseball activities in terms of in-game, I think hopefully by middle to end of this week, okay. He's back playing. So overall, I feel pretty encouraged at where he's at.
How about the bench? You have such a fascinating group of players to kind of, and I know some of it's going to be decided based on who wins various starting jobs, who will kind of assert themselves. Victor asserting himself could impact how that bench is constructed, of course, but you've got an interesting group of players. You've got a power bat. Obviously, you're going to have a backup catcher. You've got a couple of infielders, and those guys swing the bat well. So JC's been swinging it well, and then you've got versatile athletic guys like Barrero and Hellman.
Yeah, so that was a mouthful.
I'm sorry. I do that.
I do feel like it's an interesting competition because you mentioned a couple of people that maybe we weren't thinking about 2 months ago, but somebody like Barrero has been, you know, really kind of exciting player to watch, and he just gives you so much flexibility. And so, you know, I think the focus right now internally on him is like, you know, can we trust the bat? Can we, you know, have a belief and confidence in that. But, you know, just from an overall athleticism standpoint and flexibility standpoint, I mean, he'd be a great Swiss Army knife to have on our club if possible. So that part's going to be fun to watch. And, you know, obviously you think about somebody like a Lucan Baker, mm-hmm. and he's put up really good numbers at the minor league level, specifically at AAA. But the question is how can we utilize that? And obviously, he'd be a great guy to have off the bench, face a left-hand pitcher, to spell somebody at first base from time to time. So, there are a lot of moving parts here, and I think, the next couple weeks, it's going to be fun to see how these things shake out.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the bench construction has a lot of things that go into it. You can use it to play platoon advantages, as you mentioned, with a guy like Lucan to get more offense. You can use some of those spots for guys that can play 3, 4, 5 positions. And I guess, ideally, you have a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, the more flexibility you can have with your bench is really the most important. And the other thing you want to think about is you just don't want to have some young player that's sitting on the bench. I've cited Matt Adams many times on this show in the sense of when he was coming up, we were always looking for that left-handed bat, and everybody always just wanted it to be Matt Adams. But when you're a young player and you're still developing, the worst thing you can do is get 5 or 6 at-bats in a week when, if you were down in Memphis, getting 30. And so development still has to be at the back of our mind as we think through some of these decisions. But, ultimately, some of these guys that have had the success at the minor league level, at some point they deserve a shot up here.
Mo, on the pitching side, kind of back to that same idea with the bench that we just talked about, but in the bullpen, I feel like there are a lot of guys with unique looks that are slightly different from others, a lot of options to sort through outside of maybe your top 4 or 5 guys that seem to be pretty well, barring injury, pretty well set up. How do you like to play that? I mean, over the course of the year, are you looking for different looks? And maybe if I'm asking too much, then just shoot me down. You know how to do that. But a lot of guys with interesting looks and different characteristics to choose from.
Yeah, I think, again, the theme on the bullpen is going to be try to create as much flexibility as possible. And as you know, throughout the course of the season, you definitely need more than 13 pitchers. That I-55 corridor is open quite a bit. And so I think as we look at this, it's going to be trying to make sure we can maintain as much depth as possible. In other words, really don't want to have to release anybody, really don't want to have to make a difficult decision if someone's out of options early. I think the best thing for us to do is try to make sure we have that depth, and even if there's some way to even add to that between now and opening day, it's something that we still should consider.
How about the rotation? And we'll close on this, Mo. I mean, I'm knocking on wood as I speak, but so far the guys that are planned to be there have been pitching and taking their turns. You've gotten Mike McGreevy continuing to show well. Obviously, other young pitchers in camp showed well. Is that basically just going as planned at the moment, knocking on wood?
Yes. I would say the two guys that have really stood out that maybe weren't being considered for the rotation that are going to definitely make some more difficult decisions. You mentioned McGreevy, and I'd say the other one's been Libitor. So both throwing the ball really well, and so we'll have to see how that plays out. But you'd rather that kind of math than the other way. So, net, we feel pretty good about that.
Libitor's such an interesting case because, he's still very young, and he always was rated as a very high-end starting pitching prospect. And sometimes you get a false start early on when you're a young guy. I know you guys are still weighing this, and some of this will be determined in the next couple of weeks and maybe over the course of the regular season. But it's a hard thing to choose, isn't it, between what a guy's good at now and what he might end up being good at down the road?
Well, I still am in the camp of, he's a really talented player, and I think he's going to end up being a very successful starting pitcher in the big leagues. He is unique because I think he could do either bullpen or start and be successful. But I think the one thing that you have to recognize is he came in tremendous shape. He came in prepared. He's taking his fitness and preparation to a whole new level. So these are things that, a year ago we weren't seeing, and now we are. And so it's very encouraging. And like I said, it's a good problem to have right now.
Well, yeah, every team's finding that out. Ask the Yankees. They've just lost one starting pitcher for 3 or 4 months and another we don't know. I think that's a really good point to make. All right, Mo, well, good luck with everything. Hope everything stays smooth. Again, knocking on wood, you don't have any real problems between now and opening day, and we'll look forward to catching up with you when you guys get back to town.
All right, sounds great.
You got it. John Mozeliak with us here on Sports on a Sunday morning. Man, the Liberator thing is super interesting because, you know, I know that the early returns on him starting at the major league level weren't great, but he certainly wouldn't be the first young pitcher that doesn't handle that well initially, but then figures some things out and then gets back into that. And the upside of him as a starter is really phenomenal. But then again, that also creates an interesting question in the bullpen. You know, how does that impact your sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth inning situation, right? How does that impact how you set up for Ryan Helsley? So it's a little bit of a battle, but starters are more valuable than one inning relievers, man. I'll be interested. I don't know how I want to look at it yet, but I'm interested that Mo is interested. I guess is the way that I'd put that. All right, we got a little more baseball talk here. Well, just a brief thing about today's game, and then we're going to turn you over to the broadcast booth, man. We got Cardinals baseball at 12:05 as soon as we wrap it up here on Sports on a Sunday morning.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, pinch hitting for Tom as he's just made his way down to Jupiter today to continue our coverage. I'm Kevin Wheeler, and we've got Cardinals baseball coming your way in just a few minutes. That'll be the Cardinals and the Yankees starting at the top of the hour. Yeah, I mentioned there's some worry about Gerrit Cole now. That's why I didn't want to ask Mo to talk about other teams. But, like, you know, you think about the depth that he was referring to and having a lot of options. You know, other teams that thought they had enough pitching are finding out that, maybe not, right? I mean, the Yankees lost Luis Gil already. He's down till at least June, I think, maybe July. And then Gerrit Cole, we have no idea. He's having elbow problems again. And last year, he had a nerve problem in his elbow that cost him more than half the season. And if this is worse, if this requires surgery, I don't know if it's the same thing or not. They're waiting for their second opinion results. But that puts them in a position where they're down two big arms, and they don't have much behind that. Now, the Cardinals have questions, right? I mean, there are questions in the rotation. There's a question about how is Miles going to pitch after struggling in the last 2 years? How's Steven Matt's going to pitch? And is he going to stay healthy? I mean, those are valid questions. But that's why I was interested in the answer about Matthew Liberatore. Because if you want Liberatore to start, he kind of has to start. It's really tough to say open the year as a one or two inning guy and then mid-season. I mean, I guess you could do the Pallante thing, right? You could do mid-season, go down to Memphis. But now you're short a high-end arm, both in the bullpen and in the rotation. So I'm really fascinated by the enthusiasm there for Liberatore as a starter, and I'm not confused by it. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I mean, he's young enough still where a lot of guys haven't even made their major league debuts yet at Liberatore's age. So it's not like, you know, this is some 28-year-old guy that you're trying to take a flyer on. And that is an interesting kind of balance because McGreevy's been really good. He finished well last year. He's been good this year. So you've got two of those guys. Who knows, man? Hey, look, I didn't want to bring this up with Mo because he can't comment about it anyway. I would have just gotten the, well, you know, I can't talk about other things. But, like, it wouldn't shock me at all if a team like the Yankees calls about a guy like Eric Fetty. Wouldn't shock me at all. Especially if Cole's going to miss time, where there aren't really any impact free agents out there as starting pitchers, and you might be able to get a decent return because of their desperation. Well, if you're thinking about it and you say, all right, well, you've got the stability of the other veterans, and you've got McGreevy pushing, and you've got their enthusiasm for Matthew Liberatore, who's looked really good in the spring, maybe that does open you up to think about a move between now and opening day for, you know, because this was the talk that we had a lot on the Gas House Gang during the winter, was making the deals then versus waiting and seeing whether it's waiting through the spring or waiting until July. And that balance between the risk of somebody getting hurt or underperforming, but the potential benefit of getting someone that's in a more desperate situation. So, again, who knows? Maybe. I mean, I mentioned Fetty just because he's the guy that teams would probably ask most about. That doesn't mean there wouldn't be interest in someone like Steven Matz at a different level, of course. I mean, it's not going to be asking for the same return or anything like that. But that's part of why that Liberatore thing interests me, because it's going to be really hard to shoehorn it all together. If you really want to see him as a starter, do you open with him in Memphis? That's an interesting question. I don't know that that's where he benefits the organization most. But, I mean, again, you never know. But if you like him as a starter, and there may be a way to create that opportunity here by moving someone in your veteran group, and I'm not talking about Sonny Gray. He's going to you need him to stick around if you're going to be competitive, and obviously you got 2 years of control on him anyway. With Fetty having just 1 year of control, you never know. Because the Yankees are in, man. They're trying to win right now, and if they're desperate, you might get something that they weren't willing to give up during the winter. Fascinating. This is why I like sports. You always got moving and shaking and things happening and things we got to keep an eye on. And we always have games, too. In fact, we've got a game coming your way here in just a couple of minutes. The Cardinals and the Yankees. It'll be Andre Pallante for the Cardinals. It'll be Carlos Carrasco for the Yankees. And that's right here on your home for the Cards, KMOX.